Californians have been sorting through potential health care plans for more than a month now. So far, more than 100,000 people have enrolled through Covered California, but there are still 7 million uninsured people in the state. California has the highest uninsured population in the country. Anyone still without insurance by January will have to pay a fee. That's the sound of the emergency room at Highland Hospital in Oakland. It's been the county's public hospital for decades, serving thousands of uninsured people. And it was the setting for a 2012 documentary called The Waiting Room, directed by Pete Nix. His goal with the film was to help people walk in the shoes of the uninsured, something he thinks is especially important today as we debate the future of affordable health care in America.
There's a wall put between the lives of real people and the issue, particularly when an issue becomes so political, such that the human story is lost. And so what we were trying to do is bring that human story back into the conversation.
This year, Pete Nix teamed up with San Francisco StoryCorps to go back to Highland Hospital and record interviews with caregivers and patients. We've been sharing those stories with you over the past couple of weeks. We'll hear more from Pete Nix later in the show, but first, let's listen to one of those Highland StoryCorps conversations. We're going to hear two doctors who have worked together at Highland for over 20 years. Dr. Anthony Meredith Piccioni is a senior respiratory therapist, and Dr. Colin Feeney is the director of the Medical Intensive Care Unit. Feeney asked Piccioni about his approach to practicing medicine at the hospital.
There's no script. It really is a free flow. And to learn from that, to learn to deal with change, because life basically is not static, it's dynamic, it's always changing. You know, the science behind it, one and one is always, will always be two, but how it's delivered will always change. And that's the challenge of Highland, is dealing with all this diversity and trying to find not a commonality, but a way to treat individuals individually.
How do you get a Buddhist monk to the bedside before nightfall for services for a dying patient? And so these are kind of the kinds of challenges that we face, mm-hmm. that you have to, you know, figure out a way to do that. And I'd say we've accomplished some, you know, majorly things that would be very difficult, I'm sure, in other hospitals. So one patient wanted to go outside to die, and I said, "Oh, you mean you want to go home?" And she said, "No, just under the stars. I just want to die under the stars." And so, you know, we asked the nursing supervisor, "You have a problem if we take this patient outside?" So we took the patient outside and found an area of the campus where we could take the tube out of the patient's lungs, give her some morphine, and she could die under the stars, which is what her request was.
It's quite a ride.
I
had stage 3 colon cancer about 10 years ago, and so I have an insight into the other side of this, and I have to admit that you do feel everything that's done to you, and, you know, I see some patients that, you know, even in myself, to be perfectly honest, it's like, I give up, you know, it's like, come on. Your end is near, and I would be lying if I hadn't seen miracles, and I have seen miracles, but in the same token, though, it takes a lot of integrity and courage to go through this process of being sick. You know, when you're on a ventilator and things don't look good and we're doing all these things to you, poking, prodding, painful things, it takes a lot of courage to sustain that, to be, you know, to have that done to you, to want to live that bad, to go through this. I think for me, the hardest thing I ever did was get my children in a room and tell them that I might not be there later on that month. And that was a tough one. And you gamble. You do the things that you need to do, and you take it from there. And sometimes you get lucky. And so I got lucky. And how far are you going to take it, though? So if I was, like, metastasized and was near death's door, I would not be on a ventilator. But that was because I had my profession to see what other people had gone through, knowing what I would want. A lot of people, Jesus, have no idea. I'll never forget the look of some people's faces when we asked you, "Do you want us to do everything?" You know, of course I want. What the hell did I bring you here for? So you do nothing? Of course I want you to do everything. But it's like, you know, when we did everything, you could see the look in her face like, my God, this is what everything means. And it was pretty bad. You know, trached on a ventilator. That's your life. You know, I respect what people's wishes are, but sometimes you don't know what the hell they are. Actually, I have to be honest. It was my my family. Absolutely. Without them, I don't know. Especially my grandson. Now I'm a grandpa with 5 grandchildren, but at that time there was just 1. It was a real significant process to not only something to live for, but something to deal with the day-to-day thing. Because life is not the outcome, it's the day-to-day things that you have to deal with. The love. I tell my patients that too. I say, you know, you can't put love on a monitor, but it really makes a big difference when the chips are down. So keep giving it.